Thanks to Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans sometimes had people wondering about government's will or ability to help people who are in dire straits.
What a town without pity can do.
Hello, I'm Jerry Pippin. This song was recorded by the late Gene Pitney, who passed away recently. At New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina, well, that is a reality movie that was playing before our eyes on our TV screens for weeks. And most of the pictures and events were not good. Now, almost a year later, New Orleans is still struggling with its recovery. Billions of dollars have been spent, and millions are asking where the money went. There are some good stories, however. Paula Alexander Latshaw, for instance, a fellow high school speech student of mine and a very good friend, she did the right thing. She helped right away. She went to a shelter in Dallas and befriended the Elsey family. They've all moved back to New Orleans now. And an interesting sidelight to this story is the fact that many Texans in Houston and Dallas were crying about the criminal element of New Orleans coming to their city. Guess what happened to the Elseys? They were in Dallas, and yes, they had a crime committed against them. Their pickup was stolen. Thank goodness they were insured. In fact, three of the four families helped by Paula have all returned to New Orleans. Another good friend of ours, author and journalist Kathy Scott, out in Las Vegas, has some New Orleans stories we all need to hear. Kathy is now a journalist for Best Friends magazine, and she went to New Orleans days after Katrina left. Her story is one of haunting memories, many questions, and some good news as well. She went to New Orleans as a journalist to cover the story, but worked many hours rescuing animals for the Best Friends Animal Society. Kathy Scott, welcome to the show. And it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you, Jerry.
Now, you've been covering things for this magazine for some time now, huh?
Yeah, I started out in early September to go down to New Orleans and the Gulf region for 2 weeks, and I ended up staying for 2 months. And then I went back two times after that.
Yeah, I know. We kept trying to find you a couple of times, and we're a little worried about you, but you survived. You're a survivor.
I'm a survivor. I was down south helping the critters.
Now, let's talk a little bit about all of that. You're safely back in Las Vegas now, but I don't think New Orleans is straightened out yet.
No, it's not, and there's still a lot of work to do. It's amazing, really, especially in certain neighborhoods. It's amazing because you can drive through, you know, take the expressway or freeway and see parts of the city, with lights and everything, and then there are other parts that are just black. I mean, I think it's still, you know, I've heard numbers ranging from anywhere to 60 to 80% of the Orleans area, that's not the city, you know, that's the region, all the parishes are still out. 60 to 80% do not have all their, you know, the electricity and sewage and water back on.
Yeah, I want to get into some of that in a little bit, but first of all, let's talk about your main assignment. You went down there to help out the animals, and there were lots of things down there that were just terrible, I guess.
I was down there September 9th, so it was right after.
Yeah, I remember talking to you just before you went down. And
Best Friends Animal Society, based in Kanab, Utah, and that's bestfriends.org, they sent first the team down just sort of to assess things. The CEO grew up there and actually started a rescue group down there at one point. And so he was familiar and went down, took a team, followed a team the first week in September, and then we sent more and more people down and basically set up a temporary hurricane rescue center in Tylertown, Mississippi, about an hour and a half out of New Orleans.
Now, I want to get to some of that in a minute, and you just uncovered some terrible things that were happening down there.
Yeah, I went down as an embedded reporter, basically, to cover it. I ended up helping with a lot of other things, too. But, yeah, out. I mean, I went out in boats and on foot when the water went down. But you know, at that point, people, you know, hadn't, you know, there were, you know, bodies of both people and
animals.
But the, you know, the biggest thing were, you know, the animals were unfortunately left behind, and were many of the people were forced to leave them. It wasn't by choice. And these poor critters can't open doors. They, you know, there was no food, no water, nothing for them. And it was amazing what we'd see at some, you know, there were dogs and cats who lived 40 days, 45 days locked inside houses.
And they survived, huh?
Many, many did not, but they did. And when all was said and done, Best Friends later went in and opened a triage center when there were still animals who were becoming pack animals. And they were not so easy to get anymore. They went and opened a temporary triage center in Metairie in New Orleans. And all told, we got 5,000 dogs and cats out. That's it.
5,000.
5,000.
Do you know if many of the people were reunited with their pets? Or?
It was 10 to 12%.
So about 1 out of 10.
Basically, yeah. And some of the people, I mean, it's amazing. I just wrote a story for them about, you know, a dog who was just reunited with his people. And it's amazing because some of the people are just now getting settled. And then, you know, then there's the problem, you know, with you know, the fosters are very, very attached. And some of these groups who took animals to foster adopted them out at some point, and it's, you know, I did a story about a man giving up a dog he's had with him since November, and they were all set to deliver the dog to him, and Best Friends is flying them and driving them all over the country to get them to their, you know, their people. And the people decided, they're in an apartment, and they decided the dog would be better off, and they were just happy to find out that she is, actually her name is Haley, happy that Haley is happy and with another dog and with a man who loves her, and they're letting her go.
And of course that's always traumatic on both sides, from the animal standpoint as well as the people. But sometimes it works out for the best.
It does, yeah. And you know what I think this has highlighted? I think this is the first time really that it's been acknowledged, you know, in by the mainstream media. And by, you know, groups and you know, politicians and everybody else who've had to sort of have it forced, you know, as an acknowledgement that pets are actually, you know, an extension of people's family, that they, you know, they're thinking, breathing, living beings, and they're sensitive and they have feelings just like you and I do. And I think it's really the first time it's been, maybe it's accentuated because it was such a terrible disaster and thousands of animals were left stranded, and I think so. Don't you think that it's the first time it's been recognized?
Yeah, I think if there's anything good out of this whole situation, was it gave a little, notoriety and validation to the idea that pets are part of the family.
Yeah, and these people, I mean, for some of them, I mean, there was one reunion we did, and this dog actually stayed in the office with me because I'd be in the office at our hurricane relief center and went out to the field off and on. But my, you know, the base was there in Tylertown, and a dog was picked up. She was in a shed for 44 days, and her people had made steps up because they knew that it might hit the ceiling. And she was 44 days, a cop out of Florida rescued her and brought her into Tylertown. And I've never seen a dog so sick in my whole life. You know, what she was drinking and everything.
Yeah, they did, I guess a lot of the dogs passed away simply because of the pollution from the water.
Well, the ones who weren't rescued, many, there were lots of bodies, yeah, lots of them. And we've had, you know, I think there was a cat at some point who was picked up at 3 months and at 6 months died for no reason. But for the most part, they were, you know,
they were survivors.
They're survivors. But this one dog, the Cocker Spaniel, her name was Bebe, or Babe, as they say down in New Orleans. And her people came together. They were in Baton Rouge, and they drove up together after a week. And she was basically over her illness by then. And it's amazing because I think these dogs and cats resigned themselves to never seeing their people again, you know, because so much time had gone by and they had been through so much. And these people called her, and I remember walking her down the office steps, and the bay was looking, and she heard her name, and she just kind of walked slowly, and the woman got down on her knees and said, Babe, it's me. And that dog, just her head popped up, and she was an English cocker, and she just went crazy over the people. And it was so sweet to see, you know, just, but there was a delayed reaction of, you know, I always say it was about 10 seconds. So that dogs and cats, you know, one dog I remember, or a cat, it took a minute, and boy, cats aren't as expressive, but once they realize it's their people, they just go nuts, and it is so, I mean, that's why we're down there, that's why we're doing it.
That had to be rewarding. You mentioned a good deed by a cop, but you covered a story where there weren't some good things being done by cops, I think.
Yeah, in St. Bernard Parish, there were, CNN, Anderson Cooper broke the story on September 29th, and then a follow-up story on the 30th of September about three schools, middle school, a high school, and elementary school that were used as refugee centers, basically. A lot of the people in St. Bernard Parish, and it was completely covered in water, and a lot of the people down there make their living off of fishing. And there's an oil plant down there, too, but many, many people have boats in their yards, you know, rowboats or
sure.
motorboats.
Mm-hmm.
And they would row to these schools, and they ended up being, you know, unplanned relief centers, and the cops let them take their animals there, and then the St. Bernard Sheriff's Department deputies then told them at the three different schools, you can't leave here, we won't ferry you out. They actually, at that point, when they were leaving, was around the 30th of September, the 1st and 2nd, or I'm sorry, 30th of August and the 1st and 2nd of September is when the people all left. And they were told, if you leave your animals here, we'll take care of them. Some people put, you know, taped paper name tags, and to them they were told, most of them were told to tie their animals. Some brought crates. And then there's evidence, and it was shown that they opened fire, and they shot, you know, shot dogs and cats, and most were dogs, and we reunite a couple of them who survived. But I went to the high school on September 20th at St. Bernard High School, and that neighborhood was loaded with dogs and cats, and we had no idea. You know, Anderson Cooper hadn't been there yet. And we had no idea that, you know, that had been the scene. And I did go under the bleachers, and I saw three dead dogs and one live dog sitting with them. But we rescued him, but we had no idea that had been the scene. You know, it basically was a bloody massacre.
So they just lined the dogs up and shot them?
Well, we don't know if we heard reports that, you know, target practice was taking place. And, you know, there were, I mean, the National Guards, the guard officers, those guys were wonderful. They would hand off animals. There was one dog, and I wrote a story about him, that he had no more pads. As the water dissipated and evaporated, and all the toxic urban toxins were in the water, it turned into this, almost like this toxic sludge that if you put your finger in it would burn it. And this dog had no pads left on his feet.
Wow.
And burns beautiful yellow black lab puppy, 6 months old, and burns on the side of his body. And the National Guardsmen took care of him. We named him Tender Paws. And the National Guardsmen took care of him at their camp for several days. And then a volunteer who was down there feeding animals, going from house to house, took him. They handed him to her. I mean, they, you know, so it wasn't all, you know, it wasn't military. It was, we believe, an isolated incident of a sheriff's department for whatever reason. People do things under stress, and who knows what caused it, but it was pretty horrific. And there are people who are still, you know, searching for their animals who were...
I mean, I've suspected maybe some of that happened with more than just animals, but we have no proof of that.
Well, there were people, there were bodies found with holes in them, too, but there is an investigation. The Sheriff's Department ended their investigation. One cop was caught, a sergeant was caught shooting dogs doing target practice on a street. He was suspended from his job, brought back, and then he resigned. He is under investigation by the Louisiana Attorney General's office. People are frustrated with the AG's office and its investigation of the school shootings, because that clearly is two separate shootings. Because I've gotten names of officers who were there, because people in the neighborhoods I've interviewed knew those guys, and they were with them for several days in the schools, and they know officers. And so I think that's the pressure coming in from a couple of other rescue groups, not Best Friends, where, you know, Best Friends doesn't join in lawsuits usually, but there is a group, Posada, a rescue group that is pursuing this and is doing its own investigation.
So basically, the people left the dogs behind thinking they'd be taken care of by the authorities, and they killed them.
Yeah, and some of the dogs got away, and for whatever reason, we don't know if it was because they opened the doors and let them out, if it was the bigger dogs, because one guy I interviewed, and I went to the school with him afterward, he appears to be the first person inside Beauregard Middle School, where his pit bull was, and his relatives and his friends' dogs, they took 12, paddled them over, took a couple of trips to get them all there. He got one of his dogs back, but she was in an office off the gymnasium, stuck behind a file cabinet. Her leash got caught, and we think that's the only reason she was saved. But he walked over the bodies and counted them. He counted 40.
Wow.
Anderson Cooper got there. There were only 14. So we think that, but there were spots where you could tell that something had died there. And you know, it's a terrible way to go. And these poor animals didn't have any food or water. And the people, I mean, when faced, you know, people have been critical of people who left their animals, but, you know, when faced with...
Well, I think a lot of times they were told they couldn't take them, right?
They couldn't take them, but a lot of people say, well, I would have stayed with them, but there was no food, no water, and if you had law enforcement telling you, listen, I'm going to take care of your animals for you, or at gunpoint, and it's not just St. Bernard Parish, you know, but you know, we've focused on mostly the positive stories and the good deeds that, you know, and so many law enforcement did do, you know, good things as well, you know, not just you know.
Yeah, I understand.
To criticize everybody when we saw a lot out there, and we saw a lot of people doing good things, and unfortunately, some very terrible things happened.
Now, when you went to New Orleans first, right after the hurricane, the airport had reopened by then?
No, the airport was closed. I flew into Jackson, Mississippi. The airport was closed. It opened sometime in September when I flew in. I think it opened toward the end of September, and when I flew in, it was September 9th.
And so you...
I flew into Jackson, Mississippi.
And what was your impression? I mean, you'd seen it on television and heard about it, but...
It's almost... I can tell you, I was out there with a photographer the first time I went out, and I think I went down 2 days after I arrived. We went down to the city, and... you know, the streets, I think at one point we were using Elysian Fields off-ramp as a boat launch. And you go in, and the eeriest thing was going on a boat, and I was with two other people on a small boat. And you go onto these streets, and we didn't hear birds. We didn't hear cars, trucks, people, nothing. I mean, there was no sound. And the only, you know, because the birds were gone. I think Hurricane Rita brought them back. But once we got onto a street, the one gal who was on the boat with us started barking, faking a bark. And pretty soon there was a dog barked, and then we heard a cat meowing, and you just hear the whole street light up. And there was a sense of eeriness. And we knew that in those houses, some of those houses hadn't been cleared. by the Red Cross or whichever groups were clearing them out, and for humans. And we knew that there were bodies in some of the houses we went into to get the animals out. And all you had to do was open a door or a window, and they usually would come out. At that point, they weren't hiding from us. And we knew that there were bodies in there, and we knew. But it seemed to me the only thing left, and we had a huge sense of it. The only thing left were the animals. That's what was left in New Orleans, just the animals. And they were so helpless. I mean, they can't open a door. One dog, and I felt really badly about this at the time, but afterward I didn't. One guy got up and opened a door, got out of the boat, opened a door. You know, you get out of the boat and you're on somebody's porch. Opened the door and a dog ran out, and it was a medium, large-sized dog, and we couldn't get him. But he swam away. He was free. You know, and chances are that dog got saved by somebody else. You know, he was freaked out. We couldn't get him.
So the water was quite deep, and you could see animals swimming in it, and probably
some swimming. They a lot of them. If you could get them out of the house, then you could get them. You know, we got a dog off of a car. They're on top of cars. They were on rooftops. Depending on what part of the city you were in. If it was roof high or if it was porch high. At that point, it had gone down a bit and it was porch high. But there were some where we'd go into a different street and it was higher because that street was lower. You know, so it was, there was a cat we absolutely couldn't get, but then, you know, you'd get another one that would jump in and just row over to it and grab him. You know, and once they get in the boat, it was like, I mean, it was almost like they knew. There was a poodle mix at one point we got off the car. Off of a car, and he was in the back, you know, in his driveway, in the back of the driveway, and it was, you know, I don't know, the water was up to the windows, you know, up past the windows, and the dog, you know, was freaked out. Here we are coming to get them, and they don't know. They're just barking at us, you know, and the poor dog, we named him Goofy, and he jumped in the water, and we got him and put him in the car, and or in the boat, and he sat on my boat, on my lap. You know, and wanted to lick my face, and, you know, and he was filthy. You know, and it's like they look at you, and it's like they know it's over. One gal we brought in, we would have a truckload come in every night from the city, and one gal had just gotten in there like a day or two before, and this had to be, I mean, we were getting 30, 40, 50 every single day, and this was, you know, late in September. And we were taking, they were in crates, and we would carry the crate, put them in a run with grass and food and water, and someone would go in with them, open the door to the crate so they could get out in the run, you know, a 10-by-10 run, and let them get acclimated, you know, take care of business, drink some water, just a little bit of food, not a lot, and then we would cover their crates for the night and let them sleep. And she looked at one dog who I was petting his face through the cage, and we were waiting to take him out of the truck and carry him over to a run. And she started crying, and I said, "Why are you crying?" And she said, "Because look at him." And I told her, I said, "It's over. You know, it's over for him. We saved him. You know, so it's a good thing that he's here. Yeah, he looks scared, but by tomorrow morning, he's going to know."
Yeah.
At one point, there was a beautiful yellow lab, and we had a triage center, we call it, the MASS center, and the MASS unit. And he was in a crate in the sun. It was early in the morning, and the sun was on his crate, and he was at the medical area for whatever reason. He was there, somewhere inside and somewhere out. It was still warm at that point, you know, at night. And he was flat on his back with the nicest, sweetest smile on his face, sleeping, and then somebody came and got me and said, "Look at that dog," you know, and he knew he was safe. It's probably the best night's sleep that dog had had in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know. So to see the animals literally blossom within a day, because they knew that it was over, because I can't imagine what they went through, and you know, they went through what the people went through. You know, it wasn't just human you know.
Yeah, we talk about what the people went through. What was your overall impression down there? Was it just chaos, or was it fairly well organized?
When I got there, I mean, when we went across the causeway, there was just debris. Well, I think at that point, people were in, that's my doggy here in the background. People were in, they were rescued mostly at that point. There were still a few people, but for the most part, that was where they were going and finding the bodies. You know, people drowned in their homes. I mean, I went to I was there until November 1st, came home for 3 weeks, turned around and went back. Came home and turned around and went back for another 3 weeks. And I went to the lower ninth ward the second and third times I went down. And at that point, you've got people who stayed behind and people returning. You know, a few people stayed, not very many. The lower ninth ward, of course, was where the barge broke in and just decimated the area. And about every 3 to 4 houses, there'd be a standing house, and the rest of it was, you know, roofs were on top of everything, and you'd have, you know, a dog and her pregnant puppies hiding in an area. But the people had, the sense that I got in going through the lower ninth ward, even at that in November and in January, because I was there in November and in January, that the look on the people's faces was the same look that the animals had when we would bring them in. Just that lost, vacant, like the whole family had just died, and in many cases they probably had. You know, that they, I went to a Walgreens the second time I was there, and I went down to New Orleans on my own because I was researching that story, you know, we were talking about.
Yes,
And I went to the only, you know, store open within miles and miles, and it was in Carrollton, you know, kind of close to the city, and the store was mostly boarded up, but they let people go in and get whatever, and I forget what I needed to get, and there's a woman standing outside with a black cocker spaniel, and she had a look of sadness, and I bent down and pet the dog, and she was still looking for her other dog. And so I ran a story. I took a photo of her and her dog, and got a and ran information about her dog. And it turns out her dog was with her boyfriend in the lower ninth ward, and she had left the dog. And her dog was listed on Pet Finder, which was the biggest group, you know, biggest website where you could, you know, look for lost or found dogs. And her dog was erroneously listed by whoever listed it as a poodle. And as a result of that article, we found her dog.
Right.
She told me, though, when we were out front and I was interviewing her at Walgreens, she had just learned 2 days earlier, and this was Thanksgiving weekend, that her daughter-in-law had been found, and that 20 yards away was a body of a young man who was 15 years old. He was her grandson, but they couldn't positively identify him. And she said, we have had so much sadness in my family. If we could get Prince back, that was the name of the dog, it would help make us whole again. I mean, their family was counting on, was hoping as much to find Prince as they were to find family members, because he was a member. And they did get him back. They got him back by Christmas.
It's fantastic. That's a good Christmas present.
Yeah, and it was... But I think she, you know, she said it, you know, when she said, you know, it would, if only we could get him back, there would be just a little bit more happiness in our family, because they had so much sadness, and they lost everything. She lost her house, her, you know, and she's relocated to Baton Rouge. There are so many stories, because I think the animal stories and the dog stories all sort of intertwine.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. What is your impression about New Orleans?
Well, I know that people have complained about FEMA trailers, and once they get the FEMA trailer on the property, they can't get it hooked up with electricity or everything else they need to go home again. And I know that they, you know, cut off for many of them their free hotel. And I think that, you know, they not only lost their homes, their families, their pets, but they lost their jobs. So for many of them, getting a job again, you know, how can they pick themselves up? they can't go to their families because their families lost everything too. So they really are dependent on the government to help them get back again, and I think that process has been slow. You know, we've had so many people who couldn't get their pets because they weren't ready yet, so we put them in foster care. And I know other groups did too. And we held on to many of them until the people were on their feet again and could take them.
Makes you wonder if they were coming up on the storm season again pretty soon.
Yeah, June 1st, isn't that the start of hurricane season? You know, and I think that with, I can't imagine another one coming in as hard as Katrina. I mean, I went through Hurricane Rita in Mississippi, and we battened everything down. And, I mean, in the middle of the night, I thought it was over. I thought the roof was going to come off. You know, I was sleeping on the floor of the office. That's where I was for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, everything rattled. We had to, you know, we had igloos for the dogs, and you had to take all the tarps off the big runs and brought all the puppies and small dogs. Everybody had to make sure everybody was in secure. It was scary going through it, and hopefully I'll never go through a hurricane again. But it was nothing in comparison to Katrina. I would hope that we won't have anything as hard as Katrina coming up. I mean, because they've lived through hurricanes, and that was one reason why when people left, some people left their animals intentionally, thinking I'll be home in 2 or 3 days. So many people told me that. We never thought that we would be gone this long. Otherwise, I never would have left them. Some people who drove away in their cars before the levees broke, left their animals food and water thinking, we'll be home in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought that it would, would flood. You know, so it is a hard, hard lesson. You know, it's sad. I think it's a sad story. And out of the sadness, you know, you've got some just incredibly uplifting, heartwarming stories to come out of that city.
Well, Kathy, you've been a hard-hitting reporter all your life, and now you're dealing with a lot of articles about animals.
Yeah, it's kind of a departure. I'm still, in my spare time, I'm still writing books because I do work full-time for Best Friends now, and I get to write about dogs and cats. But I still get to do investigative type reporting, or just in-depth feature stories too.
Yeah, I know you.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I get to do the two best things I love in the world, and that is animals and writing.
Well, good, Kathy. I appreciate you taking time to tell me about your experiences in New Orleans. And do you have any suggestions for people if they're faced with this sort of tragedy again? I guess the best suggestion is don't get separated from your pets if possible.
Well, if you do get separated, make sure they're microchipped. And if you do microchip your animals, my gosh, make sure you register the dog in your name and with your information and a collar and ID. And that is many, many animals have been reunited, pets have been reunited, only because of the tags they had around their necks. And microchipping, so many dogs and cats came in with microchips, but the people never registered them.
Really?
Yep, and you've got to register it with a microchip company.
They just don't follow through. They do part of it, but you got to do the whole job.
Yeah, or try to make arrangements, get them out beforehand, get them to a family that's out of, fly them out, drive them out, get them out of town, so that you can be reunited. Because this is the biggest animal rescue ever, I believe, in the United States history.
You going back to New Orleans anytime soon, or?
I don't know. If anything comes up, there's stories. I mean, there's a man with a dog who he literally put wrote a note and put a bottle on the dog's collar, and he's called the Message in a Bottle dog. And he is reuniting with his dog. He's got three dogs, actually, with his dogs in St. Bernard Parish sometime in May, probably, and I may go down for that.
I understand. Speaking of dogs, your dog wants some attention.
Yeah, he wants me to. I've got some treats on the table. He wants them.
So I better let you go do that. What about the two pets you had in your picture there, the little chihuahua and
Well, a little one I named Lois Lane,
uh-huh.
And she was my, I call her my cub reporter while I was down there. Another one, Mia, missing in action. She was picked up. She was in 4.5 feet of water. And Mia, the little red one, I kept with me. And she has a heart murmur. And she's a little 5-pound chihuahua. Her owner was never found. And little Lois Lane was an owner abandoned that the people moved out 3 weeks before the storm and left all 21 animals behind.
Wow.
She's with a very good friend of mine and who works at the sanctuary in Kanab, Utah with best friends. And her poodle had died, and she needed a little critter to keep her company, and she got Lois Lane.
Well, Kathy, you're doing good work. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.